This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
Throughout the centuries, psychiatric disorders have caused more emotional and physical suffering than any other human condition. Yet, despite modern advances in neuroscience, the underlying cause of these perplexing conditions remains unclear. Also lacking is an understanding of the manifold ways that the underlying driver of mental illness can affect physical health. However, all of that could be about to change thanks to God's grace and the tireless efforts of the many clinicians, researchers, and thinkers around the world who have continued to probe virtually every aspect of human psychology, biology, and behavior in an effort to solve the mystery of mental illness. The integration of their hard work and one doctor's relentless efforts to get to the root of mental illness has led to a new hypothesis that integrates the traditional belief that nearly all psychiatric disorders are caused by environmental stress, with the emerging belief that nearly all psychiatric disorders are caused by brain pathology. The new hypothesis, which is the first to combine psychology, biology, neuroanatomy, neurophysiology, neurocircuitry, neuroarchitecture, molecular genetics, and mind-brain dynamics to explain virtually every phenomenon that has been observed in psychology and psychiatry, is based on the simple premise that psychiatric symptoms are driven by pathological hyperactivity in the brain circuits that correspond to them. The most common cause of this hyperactivity is cognitive emotional stress superimposed upon a constitutional hyperexcitability of the neurological system. The recognition of this simple but elusive dynamic is beginning to revolutionize the treatment of mental illness. It has capitulated Dr. Binder's success rate in treating a wide range of psychiatric disorders, including major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, OCD, PTSD, and schizophrenia, from around 30% to nearly 100%. And reduce the average time to symptom reduction from around 6 months to 6 days. What's more, this pathology-based approach to treatment is more normalizing, more sustainable, and more affordable than any other treatment modality yet developed. To learn more, listen to this episode. Valeria interviews Dr. Michael Binder, a holistic adult and adolescent psychiatrist, neuroscientist, and pioneer of the first comprehensive psychophysiological hypothesis of psychiatric disorders. With more than 30 years of clinical experience treating a wide range of psychiatric disorders, Dr. Binder has published 25 peer-reviewed scientific articles, 7 books, and 45 educational YouTube videos. Over the past 25 years, he has enjoyed a success rate that is now approaching 100%, and due to his extraordinary high patient retention rate, has been able to observe the long-term sustainability of his treatment approach, thus validating his work more strongly than most research studies are designed to do. Despite having trained at some of the best psychiatric teaching hospitals in the United States, Dr. Binder was, early in his career, disappointed to find that less than half of his patients were responding adequately to psychological and pharmacological interventions. Moreover, even after consulting with some of his most distinguished professors, Dr. Binder's success rate in treating patients remained unacceptably low. However, unwilling to accept the limitations of psychiatric care at that time, Dr. Binder began to pray for his patients and ask God to help him develop a more effective treatment approach. The Lord answered his prayers by alerting him to his own need for spiritual healing. He also began to enlighten him about the underlying cause of mental illness, a revelation that has taken the doctor more than 2 decades to fully grasp, implement, and reduce to writing. In January of 2024, Dr. Binder completed The Racing Mind. Brave new insights untangle the ancient mystery of mental illness. The doctor firmly believes that this 336-page, comprehensive textbook of psychiatry, which has been more than 20 years in the making, would, if turned into a curriculum for every psychiatric training program in the country, bring a swift end to the mental health crisis. Beginning in April of this year, The Racing Mind, which is valued at $3,000, will, for a limited-time introductory offer of $250, be available at binderfoundation.com. Meet Dr. Michael at drmichaelbinder.com and binderfoundation.com. Here is the interview with Dr. Michael Binder.
In your own words, who is Michael Binder?
Well, Valeria, I think all of us have a calling. And my calling, I believe, is to help people in mind, body, and spirit.
Wow, that's simple. what's not to love about that? So calling, that's an interesting concept, isn't it? The purpose of life, a mission, having a mission and the sense of being here to do something. How did you become aware of that and when?
That's a good question. I can remember back in medical school when we were dissecting brains. Oh, yeah. I think I dissected many more brains than any of the other medical students.
Wow.
And I was looking for the mind. I wanted to know where in the brain the mind was. We know where all these different structures are, but when I asked my professor where the mind was, he just looked at me with a blank stare.
Right.
But I was really curious as to where it was. And the other thing that drew me was my desire to work with people. So when I went into medicine, I was really curious about the medical field and how the human body worked. Mm-hmm. But I had a particular interest in working with people.
Right.
And that's why I gravitated towards psychiatry. I really wanted to work with people. I wanted to be the instrument of the healing and not just rely upon tests and machines to do the work, test machines and drugs to do the work that I had hoped I would be able to do in a personal way for people, in addition to using medication and other treatments if necessary.
Yes. So it's curiosity. So it's and we don't know where it comes from, really, right? This interest in a particular field or thing. In my case, has been always spirituality, or I would say the big picture of life. So, and I would say, if I would have to explain it away, it's because of trauma, suffering. So that really kind of got me on this path of finding out more about myself. But the idea of working with humans, that is just fascinating. In a way, we are trying to understand more about ourselves, isn't it, Michael? That's what it comes to me.
Yes, I think that was one of the things that really interested me in psychiatry, trying to understand myself.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that really drew me to working with people was the Holy Spirit, receiving the Holy Spirit. You know, when I gave my life to the Lord back when I was 17 years old, I had growing up inside of me this newfound, I call it an energy, but what it really was is energy and intelligence and a desire to truly help people with a love that wasn't coming from me, Valeria. It was not coming from me.
Yeah.
And one doesn't really understand this until they receive the Holy Spirit. And then they can know that there's an energy coming, working. It's like they got plugged into an energy source rather than the energy coming from within themselves.
Right. Wow. And that leads me to the question of God. That's what you're referring to.
Oh, yes.
Right? The energy, that energy. So how, so you describe that energy, it's coming from outside of the body. That would lead me to the other question that you just brought it up earlier about the mind. Have you found where, what the mind is?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And that was one of the most exciting things that came through my work and my studies and my research. And what I discovered, Valeria, was that the mind and the brain are two completely different things. Mm-hmm. The mind is what I will call in religious terms the head of the soul. Now, in psychiatry and in medicine, we call it the psyche,
right.
The intellect, the mind, the psyche. But it's important to attach it to the soul because there's a part of the soul that the mind doesn't have. That's called the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. The way I would link it to our anatomy, which is going to be important in helping to explain my approach,
yeah.
Is just as the brain is the head of the physical body, the mind is the head of the spiritual body.
Mm.
Or the head of the soul. The soul is another word for spiritual body,
right.
According to my definition.
Right. Yeah. But everything is interconnected, right?
Well, of course, yeah. But we'll get into that more in a bit. If you're interested in that, I'll explain exactly how I believe that the connection occurs.
Yes.
But the mind and the heart communicate just like the brain and the physical heart communicate.
Mm.
So a good guide to understanding how the soul is constructed is understanding how the body is constructed. And what you have is you have a brain that heads the body, and you have a heart that pumps blood throughout the body.
Mm.
Similarly, with the mind and the heart, the spiritual heart, the mind runs the body, yes, but the spiritual heart is the core of our being.
Mm-hmm.
It's where our emotions are. Our emotions are there. And it's located, in my opinion, mm-hmm. in my studies, in the same area as the physical heart.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like when you say you know it in your heart, in your heart, you must know that's true.
Yes.
Well, we're not talking about the physical heart. The physical heart, Harvey discovered that the physical heart was just a pump in the chest. We have replaced the physical heart with a baboon heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the person doesn't change where their emotions are. Their emotions are still in their chest, right. Even though now they have a Jarvik plastic heart or a baboon heart.
Right.
Their emotions are still in the same place. Mm. They're in the chest, just like the thoughts are in the head.
Right.
So there is a spiritual heart. It's located in the area of the physical heart. And the mind communicates with the physical heart. The mind is where the intellectual functions are, and the spiritual heart is where the emotional functions are.
Right.
Now, they'll say, well, we know that there is the limbic system of the brain. That's where the emotions are. No, they're not. That's where the emotional processing goes on electrically. But the actual feeling of emotion occurs in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can ask most people and they'll say, yeah, where do you experience your thoughts? And they'll point to their head.
Right.
Where do you experience your emotions? In my chest. Sometimes we experience our emotions in our stomach.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that's the spirit, that's the physical stomach. I would say you can say that's the spiritual stomach.
Right. Wow. And in this way, they seem to have different realities, so abide to laws of different realities. But In truth, everything is connected. One affects the other. And I always go back to that because I'm very interested in the big picture of life, of what this is. So, and it's interesting to hear from you that, from your experience and researches, that the mind is located in the heart, the spiritual heart, and you relate that to emotions, kind of connect those two as a location. That's interesting to hear.
I should clarify the relationship between the mind and the brain.
Yeah.
So just as I'm saying that the spiritual heart is located in the same area as the physical heart, right, in the chest, the mind is located in the same area as the brain. It's in the head. Now, what I want to be precise about here is how the mind and the brain interact. These anatomical definitions are critical in understanding mental illness. Right. And we'll get to that in a little while. But the mind sits in the core of the brain, or you could say it's focused on the core of the brain, in an organ called, or a part of the brain called, the thalamus. Have you heard of the thalamus?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
The thalamus is in the central core of the brain. Yep. It's the one place in the brain where all inputs converge. Mm. Yeah. Now, why would I think that the mind is seated in the area of the thalamus? The same reason you would say that the pilot is seated in the cockpit of the airplane.
Right.
So what is going on in the airplane? All the information from the airplane's controls and electronics are funneled into the cockpit.
Right.
That same thing is happening in the body. The cockpit is the thalamus. If you remove the thalamus, you're gone.
Because
now there's no cockpit. The cortex you can do without. We have seen children born with most large parts of their cortex completely missing, and yet they're aware.
Yes.
So you might have heard that all this consciousness occurs in the cortex. Yeah. I don't believe that. I think it occurs in the mind,
right. But
it interacts with the brain via the thalamus.
Yeah.
So that brings us to what consciousness is. There are two forms of consciousness. There is what I call corporeal consciousness.
Mm.
That's when your brain waves are synchronizing with your mental waves. Then there's incorporeal consciousness, such as occurs when the soul leaves the body, like in a near-death experience,
right. Where
consciousness is occurring in the mind without the body. So, what is the difference between corporeal consciousness and incorporeal consciousness? In incorporeal consciousness, you have consciousness independent of the body. You don't need a brain or body for that.
Right.
And that happens when you die, or in a near-death experience.
Right.
But in corporeal consciousness, your mental waves must synchronize with your brain waves. And that is called consciousness in the body.
Mm.
You heard of the conscious mind and the unconscious mind?
Yes, yes.
What is the distinction? The conscious mind is where your thoughts and your mind are synchronized with your brain waves. Unconscious thoughts are where your mind thoughts are not synchronized with your brain waves. Now, why can that be? Because the mind has capacities that are far beyond anything the brain can even come close to.
Right.
Now, you've heard people say, people will say the brain is this mysterious, amazing computer.
Right. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's rather an old-fashioned switchboard. Right. It's the mind that is mysterious and astounding. Mm. And I have calculated that the mind processes information at about 3 million times the speed of the brain. Mm. That's how fast the mind processes information. Wow. That's why people could say, I saw my whole life flash by in front of me in an instant.
Right.
That's the mind doing that. The brain can only process information at about 100 meters per second.
Right.
That's extremely slow. But why is that necessary? Because the brain, what it actually does is, in consciousness, corporeal consciousness, it allows us to slow down our thoughts so that we could think, analyze, and grow as a person. The editing occurs by the brain slowing down the thoughts so that we can edit, just like if you were making a movie and you slow down the tape so that you can look carefully at what is going on.
Right.
And that's how the system works.
Wow. How amazing. I guess a question that comes to mind because of my love for the big picture. What is... what do you feel is the purpose of the human experience?
To grow in the knowledge of love. And we grow in that knowledge by receiving love from God and then sharing that love with other people, receiving love from them, and growing. St. Catherine of Siena said, have you ever wondered what the soul is made of? Mm-hmm. It's made of love, she said. Yeah. I think that's a very good expression.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yes, it resonates true to me. The concept of love, of course, from the human experience, from the human point of view. Receiving love from God, that's an interesting idea too. What does it take for that to happen? Do we need to be open to it? What is, because I have noticed that although some people have the knowledge that God exists, they are still unable to feel that love. So it's not something that, would you say that God is always available to give that love, or that we are not always open to receive it?
Valeria, if we cover nothing else in this interview.
Yeah.
This is the central and most important question a person can ask of all questions in life. Mm. This question you asked, how do we receive God's love?
Yeah. Yeah.
We receive God's love in a very simple way. Mm. We surrender our lives to Him in marriage. Mm. It is a marriage very similar to a human marriage. In fact, human marriage is a prototype of the marriage that should begin with God.
Mm, right.
And the way we do it is we surrender our lives to God, just like we do in marriage, for better or for worse, in sickness and health,
right,
till death. Mm. But in surrendering to God, death does not separate us. Death is the complete union, and that's the only way that it differs from human marriage. So human marriage is sort of like, it's a model for the union with God. And that's why God ordained marriage, because He wanted us to practice our relationship with Him with another human being. And if you're not married, that's okay too. You could still practice it by being in union with other people in brotherly love,
right,
and in sisterly love.
Mm. Wow, how true that is. It resonates. It's just, yeah, my entire being says yes to it. Yes, yes, a billion times. And I love this idea of surrender. just giving yourself to and being open to.
And it's a scary thing, Valeria. Yeah. It's a scary thing because you don't know what God is going to do with you.
Right, right.
But isn't marriage a little bit of a scary thing?
Yes.
You don't know what your spouse is going to ask of you or become.
Yeah. So true. Yeah. That's I never heard it that way, but it just makes a lot of sense to me. I guess because my perspective is of oneness, of that God's not separate from me. So it's always, it's not two entities, but one. So it's always goes back to me. It's for the body, mind here, it goes back to realizing the presence of God or God's love and not really trying to find God somehow out there that I can have a relationship with, because it's already here. It's was never hidden in the first place or separate from me. So that's the only, let's say, nuance. That's the only difference in perspective. But it goes back to the same message. It's the same idea for sure. Another question, an open question. I hear a little bit of a noise from your side. Let me see if that will...
It's coming from a car honking.
Yeah, I see that. Let's see if that will stop so it doesn't get recorded. It should.
Stop.
It did, yes. So another open question I would love to ask you before... diving into the new approach you have found is what is your description or definition of a mental health as of today?
Please be more specific.
What is to be mentally healthy? What would that look like?
Well, there are two parts to mental health. I would say it this way. There is mental and emotional health and spiritual health. And a distinction should be made between spiritual health, because what spiritual health really is to surrender to the virtues, to the moral mind, or to favor the moral mind.
Right.
So I like to say it this way. We have two minds.
Mm-hmm.
We have a moral mind and a carnal mind.
Right.
Now, the moral mind follows and is led by the moral instincts, if you will.
Right.
The moral instincts are the virtues. Now, what are these virtues? They are humility, chastity, temperance, diligence, patience, gratitude, love, kindness, forgiveness. These are part of our moral code.
Right.
It is part of our soul. It's ingrained in our soul. The carnal mind is the part or our ingrained being that is there to take care of the body, to watch over the body.
Right.
So it governs temperature regulation. It governs appetite. It governs protecting the body.
Yeah.
And so these two are connected to the brain in this way. The moral mind is, well, I shouldn't say that the moral mind is connected to the brain. I should say the carnal mind is connected to the brain.
Right, right.
But the moral mind is supposed to be connected to God. The problem is that when people are not surrendered to God, they are not, their moral mind is, it's disconnected. It's connected to their soul,
right,
but it's not connected to the source of love.
Mm.
But the carnal mind is connected to the brain. So this gets us to pleasure versus joy.
Right.
So we know that there are things in life that bring us pleasure. Tasty things, bright lights, fancy, fun, excitement. These are all bringing us pleasure by stimulating circuits in the brain that are connected to pleasure centers in the mind. Mm. This is how we have these carnal pleasures. But with the moral mind, the pleasure is not coming from the body. Mm. The pleasure is coming from the virtues that God has endowed us with. And when we obey those, it brings us a natural joy that is independent of the body. Mm. It's independent of the body. So why is this important? Because if a person is focused on finding happiness through carnality, when they die, they will lose all that happiness because you need a body for that.
Right.
You need a physical body for that. But if you have joy, which is coming through the virtues, moral virtues, then when you separate from the body, all of those are still yours. Mm. You do not lose those because they are part of your soul, and they don't need the brain and the body to manifest and experience through.
Yes.
And what happens? We often have conflicts between these two, right? We say, I know what I should do, but it's not what's going to bring me carnal pleasure. So let's say somebody is married and they want to have carnal pleasure outside of the marriage. That's going to come through the body. But yet they know they ought not do that. And so what do? They sacrifice the moral joy of being faithful in exchange for the short-lived carnal pleasure of sexuality.
Right.
And this is foolish because that carnal pleasure is not yours permanently. It's only available while you're in the body.
Right.
Once you die, you leave that. And so it's foolhardy to engage in those things because they're short-lived, whereas growing in the moral mind and growing in that joy of virtue will be yours forever and ever and ever and ever and ever.
Wow. Yes, beautifully explained. Yes. That relates to mental health. That was the question. So you explain it to different kinds of mind. That is fascinating. Yes.
Let me get back to one more thing on the subject of mental health.
Oh, yeah.
What happens is in many, many situations in life, these two conflict with each other. And when they conflict with each other, they cause tension in the soul. Tension in the soul because of the conflict. And so if people are not surrendered to God, they experience a lot of conflict, and this conflict then overstimulates the brain. This is a very important part when it comes to psychological illness, not spiritual illness.
Right.
I've talked about that already.
Yeah.
Now I'm coming to psychological illness.
Yeah.
Psychological illness occurs when conflicts in the mind and in the heart overstimulate the brain, and then the brain in turn overstimulates the mind. And a person gets what you call worked up. If a person gets too worked up, they wind up having a nervous breakdown.
Right.
That's what a nervous breakdown is. It's when the brain and the mind get so worked up that a person withdraws and loses function. Because when the brain gets overstimulated, it becomes dysregulated.
Right.
when the brain gets dysregulated, you have gridlock in the system, like having too many cars on the road.
Yeah.
The traffic doesn't move. The brain locks up and a person can't think. They can't sleep. They can't relax. They can't work. Mm. And they call that, the old term is, was a nervous breakdown.
Right. That makes so much sense to me. So much sense. So I guess a question that comes to mind, God, I have too many questions for you here, initial questions. Would, if we take care of our spiritual health in the way that you've been explaining, would that take care of the physical health as well? Would that be the foundation?
Not necessarily, because there are certain physical abnormalities that are genetic, that are environmental, that come from toxins, that come from injuries, that come in from infections.
Right.
However, if the person takes care of their spiritual health, they will be in a better physical state in general, because moral behavior and communion with God is like sunshine in the body.
Yeah.
It's like sunshine in the body. It heals the body.
Mm-hmm.
But it will not necessarily make you healthy forever.
Right.
And of course, everyone would agree that it's not going to stop you from dying.
Right.
But it will help you be at your optimal level of health from a spiritual perspective.
Right.
Because there is an interaction between the spiritual health and physical health.
Yes.
Very definitely.
Yes, yes, yeah. I love that picture, this visual of the sun, right? The spiritual health being the sun shining on the body. So I love that idea, because even if we have some physical illnesses, as you just mentioned, or we are about to lose the body because we all will die, I think that sun that you speak of, it can still be reflected by the way we speak, how peaceful we address challenges and diseases, even in the body that have no cure. So it really feels that way from my own experience, of course, and seeing other people, the monks and the people that I have been around and I'm still in contact with. I see how peaceful they are in the face of challenges. So
the mechanism by which spiritual health brings physical health, or I could say prevents physical illness, is that spiritual health minimizes the conflict between the moral mind and the carnal mind.
Right. Right.
It minimizes the conflict because when you're connected to God, you know that God is with you and he's going to help you and he's going to watch over you and he's going to care for you. He's going to provide for you. You are not alone.
Mm.
That brings peace of mind.
Yeah.
Now, peace of mind calms down the brain.
Right.
When you calm down the brain, you calm down the cardiovascular system, the endocrine system, the skeletal, the muscular system, the metabolic system, and the immune system. When you calm down all those systems, it's called de-stressing. It reduces your stress level. When you reduce stress, you reduce the risk of illness. All illnesses.
Yes.
Just like stress is the biggest cause of all illnesses.
Right.
So also de-stressing the body is the biggest protector against all illnesses.
Yes.
That's the mechanism.
Yes. That's where that question that I asked you earlier about the interconnectedness of everything, that's the answer for it. You have done so much, as I said, off record, and have been doing such a beautiful work connecting science to spirituality. Is that how do you see this expression of you, Michael, bringing science and spirituality, or would you still call it religion?
Well, religion is a set of exercises that allow a person to grow spiritually.
Right.
It's no different than saying I have an ab machine or I have a lat machine and I have a power tower and I use this in order to get stronger.
Right.
There are many different machines that can be used to strengthen the body. But the key is that you have to use them. Otherwise, you're not going to get stronger.
Yes.
It's the same way with religion. There are many different religions.
Yeah.
All of them can be used to strengthen the soul and grow spiritually.
Right.
There are many of them.
Right.
However, and this is a key point I want to make very clear, that there is only one Savior. There are many religions, but only one Savior. And as you know, there is only one person who ever claimed to be the Savior. There's only one.
Yeah.
There are no other candidates. So, in fact, that's why Jesus was criticized by the Jews. They said, you know, and you are corrupting our religion. You are saying that the Jews are not the only religion, that you're a friend of the Romans, you're a friend of the Greeks, you're a friend of the tax collectors.
Right.
And Jesus said, everyone is invited at my Father's table. Everyone is invited.
Right.
All the religions are invited. That's what I believe.
Yes, yes. How beautiful. Yes, yeah. That's the truth, right? That everything is loved, everyone. There's no, see, that's my idea of my understanding of God, that everything is one, connected to it, and God loves everything. There's no really pushing way, judging. It's just pure love, as you said earlier.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Pure love. How beautiful. Gosh, Michael, that's, yeah, I love, love your work. I'm using that word in this way, but it's coming from that place of that kind of joy. So you have written 7 books, and we didn't talk about your comprehensive psychophysiological hypothesis of psychiatric disorder. So this is the new approach that you that's out there, and it's also on YouTube. So I have the link here, and on your website, I have both websites here. I just want to mention now as well, if I can get to the end of my page. Yeah, binderfoundation.com. So there we'll find the Racing Mind video series that's on YouTube. That was made by, which I'm not, let's see, is that a Chicago Mental Health? Yeah, that's the channel, right. So I'll have the links here. But talk to me about the approach. Because I tried to get some of the, you have been talking about stress reduction, which makes a lot of sense. It's part of it too, proper diet. So there's so many pieces to it. To put this new approach into practice, and you have been doing for 25 years, which is incredible. And I don't know why it's still a hypothesis, because it's not an assumption or an idea anymore, right? And I'm wondering where this could become available to everyone as a scientist.
It's not a hypothesis to me anymore, because my success rate is greater than 97%.
Right.
And as they say, the proof is in the pudding, right?
Right.
Now,
yeah.
I should make clear, though, what distinguishes the person who is vulnerable to mental illness from the people that they go through a lot of stress, but they never become mentally ill.
Right.
So you might ask yourself, well, what's the difference between these two types of people? Here's the key. Genetics. Now, you've probably heard it said that mental illness runs in families. But what you'll hear is, we're not sure what the cause is, probably the contribution of many, many different genes. But I found out that's not true. There is one gene variant, usually in a family, that is passed down through the family. There might be two variants, one coming from the father's side, one coming from the mother's side.
Right.
But the reason I know that it's only one or a small number of genes that are involved is that there is an autosomal dominant distribution of those children who have the vulnerability to mental illness as they grow up. Mm. If it were not autosomal dominant, you could say it was the contribution of many genes. But if it's autosomal dominant, then you know that it's one gene causing the problem. Right. Now, that's central in importance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they've done the studies on genetics, they can't see this. And here's why. Because when they study mental illnesses, they look at the genetics of only one, what they call disorder. Bipolar disorder or depression or anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and they do not see an autosomal dominant distribution. That's because when it's studied, they're not looking at all of these different mental illnesses as just different manifestations of the same gene abnormality. If you look at all of these as different manifestations of the same underlying genetic abnormality, you see a clear Mendelian distribution. That means one gene can do it in one person. It only takes one gene abnormality. Wow. And it will cause that person to either have a vulnerability to depression, bipolar disorder, panic disorder, OCD, attention deficit disorder, schizophrenia, one of those.
Right.
Now, why is that central to my hypothesis and to the way I treat patients? Because it leads to the recognition that if you can do something to compensate for that gene abnormality, you can relieve them of their mental illness and you can prevent further relapses.
Wow.
So how do we compensate for the gene abnormality? Yeah. We simply calm down the brain because it turns out that that genetic abnormality, here's how it causes the problem. It makes the neurons of the brain hyperreactive. Hyper-excitable.
Right.
So then what happens is when your mind stresses the brain, like throwing stones at the beehive, the bees overreact because they're born irritable.
Right.
And as I said before, it's when the brain gets too hyperactive that the person has a nervous breakdown.
Right.
So it's really very simple. The answer to mental illness is so simple, it's beyond belief.
Wow.
All you do is calm the brain down. Anything that calms the brain down will prevent or relieve mental illness. I'm talking about going to bed early at night, stress reduction, avoiding caffeine, minimizing refined sugar, having fun, exercise, meditation, yoga, faith, living a moral life. All of these calm the brain down and are protective against mental illness.
How wonderful. Yes, it's just, it's so simple and so true. And that's it. From my own experience, having traumatic experience, childhood abuse and all that. Yeah, that's exactly what I found out on my own, not in a nice way, after a lot of suffering. Yes, caffeine was one of them, and then reducing stress. That was that.
And when the brain is too hyper-excitable, very hyperexcitable, because some of these gene variants cause a lot of hyperexcitability.
Yeah.
Those people also need medication. And the medications that I recommend using are brain calming drugs. They're also known as anticonvulsants. I also call them neuroregulators because that's actually what they do. They regulate the firing of neurons.
Right.
Most of these medications are generic. They're very cheap and they work amazingly well. Amazingly well.
Okay. Do they have any side effects, Michael?
Usually not. If the doses are maintained low enough.
Right.
And the way I avoid side effects is that I combine them at low doses rather than trying to use a high dose of any one of them.
Yes. I wonder if there is an alternative, a natural alternative for them, like ashwagandha.
I just named all of them.
Oh, you did. You tried them.
Stress reduction.
Yes.
Anything that reduces brain hyperactivity, which are stress reduction, going to bed early at night.
Yeah.
That's keeping an early sleep schedule.
Yeah.
And I could get into that, but I don't think we'll have time. Minimizing refined sugar, because sugar makes the brain hyper. avoiding caffeine and other psychostimulants. All of those things calm the brain down, and those are all your natural ways of relieving mental illness, what we call mental illness.
Right.
These constant reverberations in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is the difference between mental illness and regular anxiety and depression? Right. We all have anxiety and depression
right.
sometimes.
Right. Right.
What is the difference?
Mm.
One simple thing. The severity of the anxiety and the duration of the anxiety.
Right.
The severity of the depression and the duration of the depression.
Mm.
The reason that mental illness is defined by a perpetuation and intensification of these normal emotions is because it's being caused by neurons that are so hyperexcitable that they won't shut off.
Right.
It's that simple.
God. How wonderful to listen to you and see what you're doing in this field, bringing science and spirituality to the same place, because that's the whole point anyways, to help humanity. So you're just doing an amazing, amazing work. Thank you so much, Michael, for being you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for what you do, because I've listened to several of your podcasts, and I think that they're a great service. I think people, I've learned some things listening to them myself, and I'm sure they're helping people enormously. And that's one of the big reasons I wanted to join you in this interview.
Yeah, thank you.
So keep up your good work.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you for recognizing that. Thank you for saying yes to it, too. So we're almost at the end. I do have a question for you that I have to ask you this question. Is there a difference? Do you see a difference between meditation and prayer?
I call prayer, meditation with benefits.
Yeah.
Because it's the same function.
Yeah.
But the difference is that in prayer, you're actually communing with a living being who is your creator. That's the benefit.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the benefit part.
Right. So that's good to know. For some of the listeners, they might be curious. So
I learned that from a person who was studying Eastern religions, and he said to me, he said, "You look like you're meditating all the time." I thought to myself, really? I'm not meditating all the time. But then I realized that I was always in communion with God, which is a continual meditation.
Mm.
And so somebody was actually able to see it.
Ah, yes. Wow, you just make so much sense to me. I know we have different language to communicate the same message, but that's exactly it. It's just a different language. I use different language, but yes, yeah, it just resonates to the heart. And that's funny how you said about the spiritual mind being in the heart. And I just said that and I touched. I just put my hand close to my heart on the chest area. So that's interesting to notice too. So before we say goodbye, I want to thank you again for your presence in our reality in this fascinating work that you're doing, for being curious and surrendering to God. What's not to love about that alone? And I want to mention the websites, drmichaelbindermd.com and then binderfoundation.com, and they will find the Raising Mind video series. I also have the YouTube channel, will be here too, clickable on the podcast notes. Before we say goodbye for today, I wanted to ask you another final question, if you don't mind. What is freedom to you, Michael? What's your idea of freedom?
Not fearing death or suffering.
Yeah.
Not fearing death or suffering.
Wow, that's another powerful message. Yes. Thank you so much again for your presence. And for everything that you're doing at all levels, the physical level and the spiritual level. Thank you so much again.
Thank you too, Valeria.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Take good care and we'll talk soon. We'll be in touch again.
Bye. You too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Dr. Michael Binder and his work, please visit drmichaelbinder.com and binderfoundation.com. To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.